Super Gamecast 64, episode 102. Today on the show, we're talking all sorts of business. We got Far Cry 5, we got some new indies like Minute and The Council. We're going to talk about the Ready Player One movie and some fun and exciting stuff that's happening in the video game world.
IRL adventures, if you will.
Yeah, let's get that DJ going.
We left the Oasis and entered the real world.
Well, DJ! It's episode 102 of Super Gamecast 64.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's a comedy show. It's also a video game show. If you don't laugh, you're a sociopath. I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Kevin.
Tyler is on vacay.
Ooh.
In the Arizona desert.
In the Arizona wilds.
I got some really, really top tier pictures. I believe you did as well.
I did, yeah.
Some nice nature.
Nature.
Wild.
Some scenic landscapes and horizons.
It looks like he's in the middle of Assassin's Creed, Egypt.
Except it's more red and less yellow.
Maybe. It's just, that was a parallel because I was trying to think of a video game that had a lot of empty space with
what
like...
What about Red Dead Redemption?
That's old times.
Oh, not for long.
While Tyler... Red Dead Redemption 2 coming this year. Oh man, we're blowing out the mics. Holy
yeah,
shit.
We are.
Fixed it. while Tyler was out in Arizona, me and Kevin, well, and many other people we know, we're visiting this new arcade we got. Kevin, what's the name of that arcade, bro?
That is called Ready Player One. No, I'm just kidding. It's called Round One.
He's making fun of me because for like the entire leading week up to when they opened, I kept calling it Ready Player One because it's called Round One Arcade. There was 12 locations in the U.S. of A, and then right by us, they dropped that lucky number 13, one could say. It's like I like to say it's like Dave and Buster's, but with more of a focus on the arcade. How would you put it? Because it's not like your standard U.S. arcade. There's lots of imports, a lot of games you'll never see anywhere else.
Yeah, it's Dave and Buster's, but hard to understand because most of the games are in Japanese. Also, there's just a metric butt ton of claw games. But hey, now Mentor has a reason to be visited, right?
Yeah.
Other than the James A. Garfield house.
Yeah, that's what they have here in Mentor. It's the house that the president stayed in, and he lived there. And now, just 2 minutes down the road, they have a brand new arcade to bake in the history. I went there. They have bowling.
Mentor also knocked down a Kmart not too long ago.
Yeah.
That was exciting.
That got decimated.
Mentor's great.
So now we got new businesses, old businesses getting tore down. it's a real...
Actually, I heard they're knocking down Kmart to put in Round 2.
Round 2. That's the much smaller theater that only has Korean games.
Argentinian, too.
Well, okay, sorry. I forgot that small subsect of arcade business that's in Argentina.
Argentina.
Shout out to all of our Argentina listeners.
Yes.
So there's so many games, and like Kevin said, a lot of them are in Japanese. So you have your standard games like your Cruisin' USA, your Street Fighters and stuff, but they do have like a really cool fighting section where all of the, there's two cabinets for each, and it's hard to describe, but they're on opposite ends. So you're not going to be sitting next to the person you're playing. You're sitting across another machine from them. So that's cool, but a lot of the Japanese games, Kevin, I thought would be fun, is since there's so many games, just to, immediately when I think top three, just the games that pop into my mind, I'm gonna go, and then you go, so just in case.
Are we talking Japanese games, or are we talking, like, regular ones?
I think since it's all-inclusive, we should maybe pick from both. I'm not trying to tell you how to, you know.
For sure.
Form your list here, this very, very, list that you focused on for a long time to make. But yeah, you should probably have a Japanese game in there as
okay,
well.
Yeah.
I'll start. Although it's expensive, my number one game is Luigi's Mansion.
Ooh, I didn't get to try that.
Okay. Well, I got to play it like the first day, and then over the week, a small child took a poop in the machine.
Nice.
Because it is one of those shooting games where...
just vacuum it up.
It's the ghost of the shitter's past.
It's the ghost of his meals past.
It's one of those games you sit in, and it's like a shooting game. You're kind of in like a built-in cabinet. There's a bunch of lights and stuff. But you use this big old vacuum cleaner, and there's a button on the top that flashes the ghosts with the flashlight, and then you pull the trigger to suck them in. The cool thing is there's this little feedback on the base of where you hold the vacuum cleaner, and anytime you suck up coins or ghosts, it's like a little click, and it knocks back, so you feel the ghosts go into your vacuum. Very fun, very difficult. Definitely intended to take your money, but I had a good time because I love Luigi's Mansion. Kevin, what's a game you liked there? There's so many to choose from.
One of the ones I enjoyed a lot was Time Crisis 5.
Ooh, see, I'm more of a Time Crisis 4 my guy, but what Time Crisis 5, that's the one where you can...
Go left or right.
Yeah, so this is a shooting game, also another on-rail shooter. You have multiple weapons in this one as well?
You can acquire multiple weapons, yeah.
What kind of weapons? Because in Time Crisis 4, you got things like submachine gun.
Yeah, your pistol, your assault rifle. I believe there was some sort of grenade launcher, though I didn't get that far.
Shotgun kind of thing?
Shotgun, yeah.
What's the story this time in Time Crisis 5? It's the fifth crisis of time.
You see, there's a crisis, and it's time to act on it.
All around the clock.
We got through the first level. Not even, actually. We got to the very end and died.
Just didn't want to swipe that card again.
Nah. It was like 8 credits.
Yeah. See, that's the issue.
Which is like $2.
Mm-hmm. When you math it out, it depends on if you have like their club membership card for discounts, but it's roughly like 20 cents a credit. And they do it like, so you pay $30 and it gets you 250 credits. And then a game costs 5 credits. And before you know it, you've completely lost track of how much money you're actually spending, which is how they get you. I do like some of the smaller games. So here, it's a weird one, but for my number two, it's a game called Hopstar. Let me tell you about this game. It's a game, it's just barely any controls. There's just a nice little area you stand on, and it's hopscotch. You either jump with 1 foot, jump with both feet, or you have to jump with either the left or right foot.
It's DDR for 8-year-olds.
Essentially, yes. And if you beat all 5 levels in the 30 seconds or however long they give you, you win the jackpot. So I play that at least once every time because you might not know, but back in the day, I was the Fury Feet Man of DDR. I was playing all those heavy songs, 9-footer, 10-footers. That's the difficulty level for those who don't play Dance Dance Revolution.
And then you tried again in Torn Oblique.
Oh my god, yeah, I did. I was like, I want to play DDR, and I'm used to playing on the hardest difficulty, and they have the newest DDR machine. I'm totally going to be fine playing the super hard song. Maybe about 20 seconds, and I'm just like, ow, my side hurts.
Would you play Max 300?
No, Healing Vision Angelic Mix. And if anyone knows that song, I kind of want to put some of it in there, because it's such a great song. Maybe I'll edit some in. If not, YouTube it, I guess. Sorry. But that song is very fast, the tempo is quick, and you got to move your feet fast, and I was not prepared to move that quickly at that time of night.
Back in the day, I had the floor mat and everything for my Xbox. Not the really good one, the one that, like...
The plasticky
crinkle
one.
The crinkle one.
Yeah, I have a few of those.
And, I used to practice Max 300 in my basement.
That was the best. PS2, they had DDR Max 1, DDR Max 2. It's a good time. I don't wish they would bring DDR back, because I don't need any more fucking peripherals or anything. We already got done with the Guitar Hero...
DDR Kinect.
Yeah, exactly. Because the Kinects are still being manufactured, totally. Kevin, what's your second favorite game that you had a chance to play at the Round 1 Arcade?
My second favorite game that I got a chance to play at the Round 1 Arcade was Table Flip, and I don't know the real name of the game.
It's a very Japanese name. If we had younger brother Dan Owen on the show, then he would be able to tell you, because he consistently gets those high score spots. But yeah, explain it to the crowd. It's known as the Table Flip game. But what do you do in the table flip game?
So in the table flip game, it's a very simple game. You have no controllers other than a table.
Big plastic table.
Big plastic table that's connected to the cabinet. And so essentially the scene that I played, it's served to you in these small little bite-sized scenes.
Yeah, you choose a scene at the beginning.
The scene that I chose was that the role of an angry father who was sitting down to dinner with his bratty kids and his guy... pretty normal wife. I don't think she was doing anything wrong. So she was like bringing food to the kitchen, and the kids were on their phones and goofing off. And if you push down on the table, everybody stops and looks at you for a second. A little red exclamation mark appears above their heads as they finally focus on something other than their devices or serving you dinner in a very, very innocent way. I really don't know how the wife got wrapped up in this, but after a few minutes, a few seconds really, about
like
a
60
minute,
seconds.
Yeah, you have 60 seconds to judge the perfect time at which point You flip your shit. And by flip your shit, I literally mean you lift up the bottom of this plastic table that's attached to the cabinet, and you flip it as hard as you can upwards.
Yeah, he's not lying. Like, you literally take both hands, place it underneath this small table, we'll say maybe like a foot or two across,
mm-hmm.
and you flip that shit at the screen like there is no tomorrow.
Yep, and in correlation to your flip, your character on screen, the angry father in this case, also flips his table full of the delicious dinner that your totally normal wife just served you. And
you get rankings based upon how far you've thrown said table, how many things
destroy.
Yeah,
I broke the actual door in the house from flipping the table into it. The TV.
My scene I did was the wedding, and yeah, you smack on that table, and I tell you what, I haven't seen a wedding cake flip that far in about 4 years. But there was hella points. I think I got like number 4 on the leaderboard. Sad thing about this game though is that they do reset it at the end of the night. Rossetti for Getty, you know, have the high scores, so it's only, you gotta take a picture.
It is actually called Super Table Flip.
Super Table Flip. Chabu Daigeishi. Sorry, I just butchered that.
We do not know Japanese. We probably made asses of ourselves, and I apologize for
But you
that.
Should, yeah, if you just like YouTube Table Flip a Japanese arcade game, you'll get it. My third favorite, and we're going to do this last two quite quickly, because there were so many games, and now I'm trying to think. Yeah, I want to say Jetpack Joyride, but that's only because I can just get a lot of tickets on it for not a lot of dollars. So I'll just pass that up. But the Jetpack Joyride arcade game, pretty easy if you play it on your phone. I'm going to say Cruisin' Blast. It's a weird one for me. I want to say Initial D, but like we said earlier with the Japanese arcade games, it's hard to read unless you're fluent in Japanese language. So every time I play that game, I just end up playing the same story mission, and I have no clue how to get past the second level, even though I've beaten it. But Cruisin' Blast is like a new game made by Raw Thrills. Nintendo had a hand in it. It's Cruisin' USA, but it's a new version of it. Very colorful. You know, you're racing around the world. You double tap that gas button and you do a wheelie with your car. Really good old school arcade action. I had a blast with that game. But yeah, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, there's just so many games. There's an entire rhythm game section, you know, tons of shooting games. Mm-hmm. Like Kevin said, tons of claw machines. And the crane games in Japan are different from how they are in the US in that they're skill-based. So the idea is to like knock the toy down into the chute rather than pick it up with the crane and drop it. So you'll have to aim at certain parts of the toy. It's kind of set up here on these little stands to make it look like, oh, it's very, very close to the edge. You just got to knock it in. And it's definitely a mind game. What's your third favorite game, Kevin, if you had to say, from round one arcade?
I would say that my third favorite was Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm if I knew how to play it.
I played both of those games on the 3DS, but I have not played the one at the arcade, even though it is exclusive to that arcade.
Honorable mention, the Castlevania one was pretty cool too.
Yes, very hard.
Very difficult.
The Castlevania game is kind of like a light gun game. You have this, you have like it's like a wand.
Yeah, it's best described as a wand, but it's supposed to be used as a whip.
And much like the Luigi's Mansion game, you have a button on the top that spits out throwing knives when you aim it.
Or whatever secondary item.
Yeah, and then you have a trigger and you hold down and you whip the wand and you whip the enemies on screen. It's hard. I liked it. I never heard of it until now.
Yeah, no, I saw the cabinet. And obviously, I can't read in Japanese, so, you know,
you're like,
I don't know
what
why
is this?
I said in Japanese. Like, that was a really weird thing to say. But anyway, I saw it, and my friend Ryan decided to be the smart one in the group and pull out his Google Translate. And I looked at it, and I thought, boy, that kind of looks like Castlevania, because Castlevania has a look.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And
very gothic
sure
style.
Enough, I saw some guy in there. He was not using the wand as a whip. He was just pointing it and shooting knives at things.
That's what I did for a good 5 minutes.
Yeah, and as soon as I found out it was a Castlevania game, it was whip time.
That's good.
It was really hard. I think the sensors were a little messed up.
Yes, you're right there. I'm actually removing my number 3 pick and placing Music Gun Gun 2 in there, which is a Japanese game. It is a light gun game, but it's more or less a rhythm game. You shoot the targets on screen in time with the music. The reason I like it is because it has classic songs like the Super Mario Brothers theme song and the Legend of Zelda theme song and the Naruto opening theme song and Evangelion. Is that how you say it? Yeah, so it's just a bunch of anime and video game stuff. It's a real good time. But round one, if you have one near you, if you live in like the Chicago area,
$2
Los Angeles,
beers.
Yeah, you know, you have to wait in line for, and you can only have one per person.
Oh.
Yeah, they have some things they have to switch up, but definitely if you've been missing the arcade atmosphere, you should try to find a round one. Like I said, there's 12, well now 13 in the U.S., most around these metropolitan cities like New York, Chicago, down in Cali. But look it up. It's a good time. Expensive, but it's a fun time. Round one was a good time, and I've been there probably like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. It's like the new hangout spot for us. But what you might not know, and you might be curious to know, is what's been hanging in video game news. Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot, to be honest. We've reached the end of the fiscal year.
It's been kind of a quiet month.
You got E3 coming up, so they're kind of, everyone's holding their stuff to their chest for these big keynotes and press conferences. We'll do an E3 prediction episode for sure, sometime after our 420 episode. But there is some stuff moving and shaking. Let's start with this, because it just happened today. You know Xbox One, right, Kevin? You play games on the Xbox.
No. What's that?
So you know how they have the PlayStation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Playbox.
Imagine if the people who made computers, but not Apple.
Okay.
If they made an Xbox.
Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft. If they made a game console you play games on.
Uh-huh. Do you use a mouse with a couple buttons on it, or how does that work?
Okay, you know how old school mouses would have the ball on the bottom?
Yeah.
You have to open up a mouse
from
like 1990. Like
put your finger in it?
Pull out the ball.
Uh-huh.
You now have to have 4 more of those.
Okay.
You tape those balls together.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you have this little 4 ball kind of cube thing.
Right.
It comes with a camera called the Kinect 2.2. And you use it, and I don't know where I was going.
What
with
happened
this.
To Kinect 2.0 through 2.0, 2.1?
They released to the public with very much praise, very quickly fell off, and now they stopped manufacturing them. Or that was just Kinect historically.
That was just Kinect, I think.
So Xbox One. Very well known for their... Thanks, bro. Yeah. Pat on the back. That was Kevin patting me on the back and not me patting myself on the back. Xbox One, you know, sometimes they make a blunder. More often than not, PlayStation's been winning the console generation. But there are a few things that Xbox does better than PlayStation. In this regard, I will say backwards compatibility
is probably
number one. Not only can you play some Xbox 360 games on your Xbox One, but you can also play Xbox original games on your Xbox One. I know this sounds confusing. Before there was like, I don't know, like 8 or 9 of these original Xbox games. You had Psychonauts and Crimson Skies. And then just today, they announced, how many? 19.
19.
I know Conker Live and Reloaded was on there.
You want me to just read them to you real quick?
Yeah, you know what? Let's blast off these 19 real quick.
I know you guys paid for the whole seat, but you're about to just be using the edge. All right, we got Blinx, The Time Sweeper, Breakdown, Conquer Live and Reloaded, Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind, Hunter the Reckoning. Ooh, that was a good one. I remember that game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Morrowind.
Jade Empire. Jade Empire.
That's actually a great RPG, Jade Empire.
Panzer Dragoon Orta. Mm. I don't know what that is. SSX 3. That's dope.
These are all great games so far.
Now, here is the, as the French call it, the piece de resistance.
Okay.
Destroy All Humans, Full Spectrum Warrior, Mercenaries, Playground of Destruction, MX Unleashed, Panzer Elite Action, Fields of Glory. That's Europe only.
Okay.
Star Wars Battlefront, Battlefront 2, Hell Jedi yeah. Knight, Jedi Academy, Jedi Starfighter, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords, and Star Wars Republic Commando.
So it's almost like they went to little Disney.
But wait, there's more.
And this one's a squeema.
Darksiders, Gears of War 2, Portal 2, Red Dead Redemption, Sonic Generations, and Star Wars The Force Unleashed.
Those are...
360.
Oh, okay. I was like, what? That's weird.
They're going to bring enhancements to those games. My mistake.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That is a thing with the Xbox One X, is that if you have the Xbox One X box, then you can take out your Xbox One X from your Xbox One X box and put it into your TV. And then if you have old games, they actually up-res the resolution and stuff. It's really snappy. Kind of like what you see when you're running old games on a PC. So that's cool. A lot of Star Wars content.
Dude,
really, like, all those games were great. There's maybe, like, one or two that I wouldn't say are the best, but at least 50% of that list, I would say go to, like, the exchange or some sort of buy-sell-trade ordeal and pick them up, especially the Star Wars games. We haven't had great luck with past Star Wars games. Well, with recent Star Wars games.
Well, all anybody does is say, oh, this old Star Wars game is so much better than this. Well, guess what?
Now you can play it. Now you can play it. So shut the fuck up and take EA's money. Take EA's money. Yes, take it. Backwards compatibility is great. We all love backwards compatibility. We also like new modes. There is a game that Kevin has been just riding on for the past year or two. You guys pretty much know what it is without me having to say it. It involves cute pixel graphics and simulating your own farm. It's Stardew Valley.
I was going to have him guess.
Okay, forget what you just heard. Now guess.
Guess what it is. Did you say Stardew Valley? Because you're right.
It's a clue, Blue.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah, dude, I know. We're on the same wavelength.
It's a visual gag, but you know.
So Stardew Valley. They have been talking about this multiplayer mode, cooperative play. We've been following it for a while. Not a lot of news here, but a little tweeter. Kevin, what was that tweet they said, right?
Yes.
Yeah, why don't you give me the good news?
He actually tweeted it out today. He was saying that there is about a month left of development before they release the multiplayer patch.
Pending any sort of last-minute difficulties. It's looking like it'll be right around the corner. Which is good. There was a few delays.
You know, I don't mean to be presumptuous.
Nice.
But it will line up with my birthday. It sorta.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that Concerned Ape is releasing multiplayer for Stardew for my birthday because of how much publicity I give him.
You aren't wrong. It's now, I mean, now really the dog is out of the purse. We have to tell you that I hit up Concerned Ape and I was like, look, the Stardew Valley game, IMO, like 8.5 out of 10. But my boy Kevbo, he thinks this shit is the bee's knees, the cat's pajamas, the thing that a cat gets into when it's ready to go to sleep. And I need you to add some multiplayer support so this man can play with me and his wife and all of his friends. And Concerned Ape said, you know what, Matt from Super Gamecast 64, you are a well-respected outlet in the video game journalism industry, and therefore I have to bend my will to your liking. So happy birthday. I forced your very favorite developer.
It's not my birthday yet.
Happy almost birthday. I forced your favorite developer to slave for endless nights making this multiplayer patch purely for you. But under the assumption that everyone will get it. That's the joke at the end of this, is no one else is getting this patch but Kevin. So he can only play with himself, and no one will be able to play multiplayer with him.
What else is new?
It's okay, buddy.
I'm just kidding.
Maybe I'll buy it. Speaking about other things that could potentially ruin games. Well, you know, I think this is more fun. Kevin, you know Fortnite, right?
Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, what?
Right?
2 weeks?
Yeah. That's a Fortnite.
Sorry. I blew out the mic again. I forgot what Fortnite stood for. Also, adjusting the gain on the mic.
It is such a part of the cultural zeitgeist at this point that people forget that it has an original term.
Yes, it's a measurement of time.
Thanks a lot, Drake.
Hey, man, don't give Drake too much shit. It wasn't his fault entirely. So, Fortnite. A patch or two or three or four, because they patch this thing so often, ago, a comet appeared in the sky. Do you know anything about this, Kevin?
I do know about this.
So, I don't want to really get into this too much.
Yeah.
Because it's fan theory, it's conspiracy at this point, and as fun as that would be to do, I think soon enough we'll figure out what it is. But a comet appeared in the sky, and every few patches, or every patch, it keeps getting closer.
Also, they would find, you know, telescopes, those things.
Yes.
Telescopes all over the maps.
Yes. And so all of a sudden a comet appears. It's getting closer. This is a game where people notice everything. And it's also a game where the developers take some advice from people on the internet. They are known for going to Reddit with some of their other games like Paladins and really taking fan consideration into account. And I believe someone had said it would be funny if Tilted Towers got blown up by an asteroid. And now there's a comet that's flying kind of towards Tilted Towers. So the assumption right now is that Fortnite will be getting some sort of big map change right around maybe E3.
I actually heard, has it been removed?
What? The comet?
The comet?
No, I don't. I honestly have not booted up Fortnite in like 2 weeks.
I heard that it disappeared on April Fool's Day.
Oh, really?
And the actual, like, the official Fortnite Twitter account said that the comet was heading for Tilted Towers, but it missed because of Bloom.
Oh, man, look at this go. No, we're good now.
Let me, I'm going to hit you with that punchline again. It missed because of the Bloom.
Because, yeah, that's a...
That's the joke.
That's the joke. Are you being serious, though? The comet disappeared?
As far as I know.
Well, okay, there's only two explanations for this. Either it was a big old April Fool's joke, Or Tilted Towers is going to get exploded and they're going to move it. This is what I think would be great. If they made a new
Toxic
map.
Toxic Towers?
Well, that. But
I'm
if
the
they,
first person to say that ever.
If they, yeah, probably. Really. If I was watching a series of unfortunate events on Netflix the other day and I went to like some sort of like weird warp hole where I was like, where have I heard this name Vile Village before? I'm like, what is this? And then I was like, I'm just thinking of like Greasy Grumbos, which is what we call Greasy Grove in Fortnite. I love the alliterations, Haunted Hills. My girlfriend's a really big fan of Series of Unfortunate Events, so we started having this back and
the
forth.
The Calgary Carnival.
Yeah, where she would say something, and then I was like, Lonely Lodge. She was like, A Series of Unfortunate Events, book four.
Moisty Mire.
Yeah, uh-huh, you're right there. But I think it would be great if they added a new portion to the map that was like a ruined Tilted Towers, and then...
That's what everybody was assuming.
And then Tilted Towers would be a crater with maybe some cool like alien tech or something. Oh, well, either way... I like games that are persistent online and then have these weird anomalies that pop up. It reminds me of like early Destiny when you run into a public event and you're like, what is this? It adds a little bit of flavor to the game. Plus, for it being a free game, it's a good time. So Fortnite, good stuff. Another thing I like about Fortnite, and I think people are really undercutting, is that Fortnite has literally made video game history. Mm-hmm. This is the first game ever to be free and also good. Shots fired. It's the first game ever to feature full cross-platform play as far as mobile. I don't know if there's games that have worked between console and mobile before, but definitely nothing on this scale. So before, when I was playing Fortnite and I would kill someone who was bad, I would just be like, oh, that trashy PC player or whatever can't even be good. Now, when I scope someone in the face, I'm just imagining like Jimmy Johnson in fifth period math getting fucking scoped on his mobile device.
Did you see that thing on Reddit?
Which one? Which Reddit part?
The thing where this guy went to Reddit. He's a teacher. And
told people to stop.
Found out that his kids were playing a lot in class, and he asked the devs to put it in the loading screen. And in the loading screen it says, Mr. Harris says, stop playing Fortnite in class.
Yes, I did see that. But I guess it has become an issue. Guys, you're there to learn.
I heard it explained, though. I'll wrap it up with this. I believe it was Chris Plant on the Besties podcast, without kind of selling out ourselves to our competitor.
They do once a month.
Not really a
so
competitor. I mean, we're... Anyway, he described it as like... PUBG meets like the multiplayer of GoldenEye. And I thought that was a really good way of wrapping it up because GoldenEye kind of seemed like it was trying to be more of a serious game,
yes.
but the multiplayer was so much fun and it's just so goofy.
It's lighthearted, it's open, it's easy to learn, hard to master. It's got all the good staples of a good game. Plus,
yep.
It's free, and like I said, there's so many places you can play it on. My computer is freaking out, so if there's like any like if you just lose about 20 seconds of our audio in here. Know that it's not us, it's just our failure to keep our
aliens.
Technology modern. Or aliens, definitely aliens.
It's more fun that way.
That's what's been going on in the game world.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been playing some games, though. A lot of games have been being played. We're going to go pretty quick with these games, because at this point, I think some of them have been out for a while.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't out yet, so we'll talk about those more. But we're about reaching up to 30 minutes here.
Yep.
I'm going to start with Far Cry 5.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Far Cry 5, Kevin... Brief history of your history with Far Cry games.
None.
Really?
Yeah.
So
never played one.
For me, I played
always wanted to, never did.
The definitive edition of... It was like an original Xbox game that got ported to 360. Played Far Cry 2. I played a little of the first one. Generally speaking, I've played every Far Cry game in some sort of capacity, maybe only missing one or two. I was a big fan of Far Cry 3. Far Cry 4, interesting, but I lost interest. And Far Cry Primal pushed the crafting in a way that... I didn't like because I'm not a fan of crafting in games.
I feel like that would probably be my kind of thing.
That's your
I'd
when
like
you said
that.
Far Cry, I said you should try Primal. But
yeah.
Now that you've played Far Cry 5, I think you might really understand why Far Cry Primal isn't that great. So Far Cry 5, you play as Nameless Sheriff's deputy,
mm-hmm.
riding in a helicopter.
Woody.
Yeah, Woody. And you're going to arrest the leader of a cult. His name is Joseph Seed.
He's the leader of the bunch. You know him well.
His cult is called Eden's Gate.
Yep.
They're a bunch of, like... It's kind of hard because the game doesn't really put its foot in any towards anything.
The game echoes a lot of modern political issues, but they never actually step in it fully.
Yeah, you would say that they appear to be like alt-right gun nuts, but yes. At the same time, their philosophy doesn't really align with that because you're never quite sure what their philosophy is.
Like, there's a couple throwaway lines here and there where they say something about people taking away their guns and how they're glad they didn't. But they never really commit to that as an identity.
I think in many ways, it's kind of just like they were making this game a long time ago. This isn't a game that you just make in a year.
No, I think
this kind of shit just fell at the same time. It was very coincidental. But it is something that I think they had to push back. They maybe had to not tell the story they were trying to tell because after beating this game, I still don't know what the cult believes in. I know they believed in the collapse, which was what this... The whole reason that the cult revolts against you and starts taking over this county of Montana is because of something they call the collapse. It's a prophesized fall of humanity, you know, kind of doomsday stuff, which echoes the doomsday bunkers and stuff that you'll find. But for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what they were. There's some subsect of Christianity because they talk about, like, the Lord and our God and very...
And the breaking of the seals and things like that.
Yes, and the seed family. You have Joseph's seed at the top and then...
Jacob. And then Hope.
Hope. Well, there's three siblings.
It's right.
Jacob, Joseph, John, and Faith.
Yes.
So those are all biblical names. The idea of Far Cry is you got to take down the cult. So what you do is you go into each of these, each part of the map is controlled by one sibling, right? So in the north, you got Jacob and he's training him. In the south, you got John and he's like the recruiter. And then Faith makes all the drugs in the east. So you kind of go into their territory, complete missions, you know, liberate strongholds, that kind of ordeal. And you're getting these resistance points that are building up towards taking them down. Once you fill up the resistance bar with your resistance points, you can fight the sibling and take their territory. What did you think, Kevin, on the effectiveness of the story? And well, I don't know exactly how much you played.
Maybe give me your... the moment I left my house today, I was ready to fight my first lieutenant.
Okay, cool. So you've made yourself a path through at least one sector.
Correct.
Would you agree with me that the main story is lackluster, but the sub-stories within the characters that you find?
Yeah, so a lot of the mechanics that they incorporate are a little bit clumsy.
Who are you fighting?
The resistance meter is one of them. The recruiter, John.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the resistance meter is never really fully realized or explained. But it is a cool concept. But I think the most exciting stuff has been kind of walking around and stumbling across these little vignettes that you get to experience through these secondary and tertiary, and sometimes even like just complete bit parts.
Yes.
People that you can hire to help you out. But realistically, they're the same character model you've seen 10 times. It's just that the voice acting, the story behind it is a little bit more intriguing. There's a lot of cool little Easter eggs. Like, I don't know if you saw Frobisher's cave, but that was pretty funny. There was a cougar that got really big, I guess, and like ate the rival school's mascot. And so like they all were so excited by this that they named themselves the Hope County Cougars.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's like all these like little...
I think there's a red balloon vignettes by a sewer gate, like the balloon. Seriously? Yeah, there's tons. There's at least like 20 Easter eggs. But I'm glad that you brought up the structure of how this game plays, because the reason many people kind of maybe stepped away from Far Cry is the same reason a lot of people step away from Ubisoft open world games in general, is that you would climb some sort of high peak, see all the stuff on the map, and then it would fill your mini-map up with markers. You go and you visit those markers. That's how you're finding missions and progressing. In Far Cry 5, your map will be populated with, there's maybe a character here, there's a mission here, but everything else is under a fog of war.
And the way that it plays out is you have to uncover that fog of war by liberating these outposts that are like specific, respected, and like, and celebrated areas of the community. So like a pumpkin patch or an orchard or something that was owned by a family that's given life by these characters that say, oh, I used to go to Sanders Orchard all the time when I was younger and I really loved it. And so when you go to liberate these outposts, once you do, there's always another NPC in there that goes, oh, my irrigation ditch is all screwed up.
Yes.
Do you mind helping me put it back together? And then there's one guy that's like, my buddy Sam used to live in a bunker right around the corner and like...
But we haven't heard from him, so you should go check him.
Yeah, and those ended up being the most fun to me. The prepper stashes? The prepper stashes are some of the most fun parts of that game.
Before we hop to the prepper stashes, I just want to reinstate the idea that Far Cry used to be a game about mini-map markers and going to objective markers. Now it's almost like, I like to say it's like Skyrim in Montana. It's not like Skyrim, but in the idea that you're walking, you'll discover a location. Once you clear said location, you'll find maybe a map that shows you another location. Like Kevin said, maybe a character who wants you to go figure something out. It's very much exploration leading to the missions, not the missions dictating where you're going to visit on the map.
And in the meantime, you'll be sidetracked 17 times and decide to stop and fish or... You know, they have hunting locations and like, well, the hunting has been kind of
dumbed down,
way dumbed down. And the whole thing has kind of been basically boiled down to instead of like materials, you just need money to upgrade stuff, which kind of sucks.
They've done a lot of things to alleviate, like if you were someone who didn't like crafting like me. You can now just buy any craftable items. Before in Far Cry, you would maybe have to skin 5 bears to get a new wallet. In this, there's none of that. It's just crafting is for like explosives and grenades and Molotovs, etc. I liked that a lot. But these prepper stashes, because this is the new thing. You know, for all of the cool ways that they kind of introduce you to the missions, the actual gameplay is very Far Cry. You know, shoot these dudes, liberate these strongholds, etc., etc., etc. But the prepper stashes are really cool. They are... I like to equate them to the shrines in Breath of the Wild.
Yes, very much so.
Because there are very many of them. There's over 100 of them. You can either stumble across them or someone will tell you about them. And they are... Oh, Kevin, you say it because I think you have a better grasp on...
What I like about the prepper stashes is that each and every one is a mini puzzle. And either it's relayed to you by one of these NPCs that you save throughout the world, or you stumble across it and you find a little note that says, "Oh, me and my wife are holed up in this bunker. You got to get to it." And the bunker is, it's in a burning house or something like that. So you have to navigate your way through the burning house through a very specific method in order to get to the bunker. It has all sorts of these cool little, just mini puzzles and they're just long enough. Like, I think they really...
It's like 5-ish minutes, maybe if at the maximum. Like, one of the first ones you come across is, on the starting island is like, oh, this bunker, but it's flooded.
Yep.
So you can swim down in there and maybe grab some floating ammo. But if you want to get like the actual good stuff, unlock the safes and stuff that have all the good treasure, you're going to have to figure out a way to...
Turn the power on to get the pump running.
Yes, exactly. And there's a bunch of unique locations. It's really, really cool. And the last thing I'll say about this is even once you've reached... once you've filled that resistance bar... And you're ready to fight these people or bring down that seed sibling, you will have maybe uncovered 70% of that sector.
Yep.
I have beaten the game, aka, you know, overthrown the people and seen the ending. And the ending is something we're going to talk about in Game of the Year stuff because it's very, very cool. It's worth seeing to the end just for the ending. But you have, you know, still in at least each sector, I have at least 15 missions I can do. At least 20 so side missions. You know, there's always something to go back and do, and I enjoy games that have enough content that make me want to go back even after I've beaten, you know, the 20 some hour. It's a good time. What I'll say is that it's not really... It might not be the radical change that some people were looking for from the Far Cry franchise, but it does enough different that it breathes new life into it.
I would argue that it's... it's not consistent with the quality that Far Cry has put out up to this point. From what I understand, again, I've not played the other Far Cry games. But it does hit on points that other Far Cry games completely missed. So...
As a final point towards this, I just want to bring up Far Cry Arcade, which is basically this map editor. It's pretty complex. You're not going to be able to pick it up and make a good level in a minute. But not only can you make single-player and co-op little missions for people... you can make multiplayer maps, and that's exactly how the entire competitive multiplayer functions. You hop into a 12-person server, 3 people vote on the maps that will populate the hopper, and then you vote which map you want to play. And each map can have different loadouts and different rules per the creator what they want. So you might play a recreation of Dust from CSGO, a recreation of Nuketown. Someone's made a mini PUBG map. There's tons of different game modes and types, and it kind of has this old school, original Xbox Live, unbalanced, kind of casual, fun feel to it. A game where I hear people on their mics, whereas you don't really hear that nowadays more people are in parties. So Far Cry 5, I reviewed it on a 90skid.com. If you want to read my full thoughts about it, I ended up giving it an 8.5. It was a good time. Kevin, you're still going through it. Think you'll finish it out? You think this is one, or you might fall off of it?
I'd like to think I will.
You really have to chink away at it.
And barring anything that comes out soon, which really there's not a whole lot I'm like chomping at the bit to play other than like Bloodstained, but yeah, that was supposed to come out in March and it didn't, so.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll hear about it at E3, I'm sure.
And if they maybe, you know, ever add anything to Sea of Thieves, which we'll talk about soon.
Yes. Before we talk about Sea of Thieves, I just want to talk about Yakuza 6. Yakuza 6, The Song of Life, comes out April 17th. We got an early copy, TY Sega, TYTY. I have finished the game. I'll talk about it more once it's out, but what I'll say is that there's a first-person mode. You can go into all the buildings. Just real quick, Yakuza 6 tells the story of Kiryu. He is a Yakuza, well, he used to be in the Yakuza. Now he's kind of retired. He's pulled back to his old stomping grounds of Kamurocho, Tokyo, a fictional red light district inside of Tokyo. The game has tons of dialogue, tons of wacky characters. It's kind of a open world brawler, that tells this very serious, crime story about the Japanese, organized crime, underground syndicate stuff. It's can be complex. There's tons of characters, but it is wholly Japanese, super quirky, a lot of fun stuff. And like I said, I'll talk about it more when it comes out, but I just had a blast with it. And even though it is the sixth game in the series, Sega goes to great lengths to make sure you can completely play this game without playing any of the other ones. You can look at full recaps of each game leading up to it in this little part they call Memories. It's a little mode in the main menu. The first 2 hours, they make a big point of like, here's this person and here's how they know you. So if you're interested in Yakuza 6, I would definitely recommend trying it out, renting it, Redbox, you know, Gamefly, whatever. See if it's your deal. And yeah, if it intrigues you, but you don't want to make that $60 purchase, maybe try out Yakuza Kiwami, which is still a great game. And that is the remake of the original Yakuza. But yeah, that game will be coming out April 17th, I want to say. I'm pretty sure, about 90% sure on that date. But I thought it was a great time. I always like the Yakuza games. Definitely quirky, not for everybody. But if you're like a fan of those old PS2 brawlers, kind of 3D beat-em-up games mixed with a little bit of RPG elements, well, a fair amount of RPG elements and some fun storytelling and some fun characters, Yakuza might be for you. Let's do this. Let's talk about Council. The Council, Episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, this is a game.
I have no idea what it is.
This is a game. Think Telltale.
Yep.
Remove a lot of the dialogue and quick time events. Okay? And bring...
So, a movie.
Okay, but the style of your controlling character, you're walking around this like kind of 3D space. It's very much a narrative-driven game. Instead of the dialogue being like... moral decisions, if you want to say it, they're kind of like ways to gain information. So you are playing as this guy. It's in like this Victorian era. I'm trying to think of what year it is. George Washington is in it. So whenever he was president, you are summoned to this island by this, it's very lush, or not lush, but very, very nice, high class mansion that's on this island, where these people are meeting for a council, and you are the son of this woman and she has disappeared. You belong to this secret organization. So you go to this, this island trying to find out more information about your mother's disappearance. What makes this game different from games like Telltale is you have skills. You have skill trees. When you start, they're like, pick your class. You can be an occultist, a detective, a scholar, and those things allot you different skills. So say early on in the game, I walk up to this guard. I have chosen the detective class and unlocked the quote-unquote questioning ability that allows me to question people. Different characters in the game have different vulnerabilities and weaknesses. This servant, since he is lowly on the class scale, if you will, and I am a member of this elite, he is vulnerable to me questioning him. And since I have that skill, I'm able to pry some information out of him and eventually even gain an item from him. If I hadn't had that skill, might have missed it. But it's this weird way of walking around, talking to people, finding out about why these people are on this island, the reason behind the secret council meeting, where your mother is gone. There's some supernatural stuff tied in. Your character will black out and have these visions, waking up with like a bleeding nose. What I will say about it is that it is a game that I believe is like $8, $10 for an episode. And when you see it, you will be blown away at how good it looks. But you will not be blown away by the writing and or the voice acting. Not everyone does a terrible job, but most people do a, you know, serviceable job. Some lines just come off super weird. And I don't, maybe it's just me. And maybe it's the time period and they're not evoking it correctly. But every time this guy you're playing as speaks of his mom, or you see him or see them together in a flashback, he goes, "Mother, mother, I must find you, mother." It's every time she is the subject of a sentence. It's, "Mother, I must find mother." And I'm like, it's like a Norman Bates kind of thing you got going on there, bro. It's like he's licking his lips like, "Mother." But I don't know. It hit me weird. And I will say that it's very impressive visually. I'm liking kind of the old school Nancy Drew. It's got point and click adventure elements to it, even though it's not, but you're finding items, trying to form connections to those items. It's a cool mystery. I'm interested to see where it goes. Right now, I would say if you're a fan of Telltale games and you may have been looking for something a little bit more realistic, maybe take a look. Not going to blow your socks off, but it might be the beginning of something really cool. And I think that Telltale has really cornered this market in a way for the past few years, and it's high time that some other developers take a shot at what Telltale has been doing. I know other developers have, maybe not to such success, but there might be that kind of success in the console. I know it's on Xbox. I believe it's also on PC and PS4. So yeah, go give it a check. Shout out to the PR people over at Evolve who let us get a copy of this game. We're a little bit late on the coverage, but sorry about that. But yeah, it's a good time, especially if you like those narrative adventure games. Just a little bit weird with the voice acting and some of the characters also, too. They're not like that realistic, even though they look realistic. They're kind of like off cartoony. I'm trying to describe how it is. Very realistic looking graphics on people with emphasized features to make them kind of look caricaturesque. Right. It's weird, but it's cool.
Kind of like Telltale.
Yes. I would say the characters in Telltale...
Less cel-shaded.
Yes. Even though the characters in Telltale games are cel-shaded, they look more realistic than the people in the console.
They're almost trying too hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say maybe trying too hard, maybe if they step back a teeny bit. You know what? I feel like this next one, we're both going to feel the same about... Let's not drag it out too much.
No.
You were the big proponent of this. I also thought it was going to be a good time. You were hoping for something, but I think you kind of called it. I think we all called it, Tyler too, when we were talking about this game coming out. We're talking about Sea of Thieves.
Yes.
When we were discussing this game originally before it came out, we said that it looked like a fun sandbox that would last for maybe a week or two if they didn't have enough content. Kevin, what did we actually receive?
We received a beta that released at full price.
A lot of people might give you shit for saying that, but I think there's a fine line between saying, "Rare, you made a fun thing to play, so I'm not going to give you any shit," and there is no excuse for this.
The game is a blast. It's a huge dichotomy because the game is amazingly fun. If you play with friends.
And here's what hurts me too, is that I played this game for 20 hours. And for another person, playing a game for 20 hours at a $60 price point is fine. But like I said with Destiny, Destiny doesn't sell itself as a game that's always online. It's a persistent universe. It's just a co-op game that you can play with friends and you see other people in the world. So for that, they tell it's a great shooter. It's a great game, a great single player shooter that you can play with friends, Destiny 2. Some people are mad because it doesn't have lasting power, but they never sell that. Sea of Thieves sells itself as a game that will always be updated. Yep. That it's on the Game Pass. You can play the
new like Eternal style game that they're.
And when we talk about that, the base content is literally the same three quests.
Well, and it was different shells. And it was the same content that they gave in the beta.
I played the beta maybe for like 5 minutes. When I played the beta, I dropped in on a party that was already midway through a adventure. So I got some of the stuff, but not all of it. But you played the beta.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend of the show, Mike and Brittany, they played the beta quite a bit as well. So much, in fact, that as soon as the game started, they ran. They knew exactly where to go.
Yep.
You would say that for the final from the final beta to the final shipped product, it might only be like a 0.01 difference. They added characters and vendors who talk.
Here are the things that I take issue with, other than the lack of content. I'm upset that the character generation was so clunky. You basically get a pinwheel of characters to choose from that you can infinitely refresh.
Yes.
But you never get to choose any of the details that these characters possess.
They just make random characters and you gotta hope that
you just roll the dice. And, you know, it got to a point where I just didn't care anymore and I picked one and now I'm stuck with that character.
Yeah, because bad news, there, even though the feature might be coming, you can't change your appearance. At the very, if you really hate how your character looks, you have to delete them, losing all of your gained faction experience and all of your loot or whatever.
Right. That and the economy that they've created, the economy of do this quest, get this gold, buy this thing. It doesn't lend itself to making you care. There's a point where I'm hoarding gold and I'm saving it up for something, and then by the time I get it, I'm just like, okay, now I have this thing, and it literally gives me no additional power. It gives me nothing more than looking good, which, I mean,
all items are cosmetic. Everything is cosmetic.
Well, and we might be eating crow a little bit here because, you know, the big thing that we were complaining about in the past is, oh, well, loot boxes give people an unfair advantage. We've literally gotten a game where everything is cosmetic and now nobody likes it. So,
but the thing is that if there was, I would rather take the loot box economy for all cosmetics in Sea of Thieves over what they've done.
Right. If they had chests that opened and had a random chance at a really cool piece of gear.
That would make sense. That would be better than going to an island, digging up a treasure chest, hopping it back on your boat and I know people like it because of the idea that it's online. At any time, a huge ship can hit you and attack you and sink all your stuff. So it adds that little bit of PvP anxiety to it. But if the result of me losing that treasure is that I can't buy a new pair of hot pants, I'm not really going to cry about it.
And here's the thing. The game itself, the gameplay, it's a really great foundation. And what I'm seeing is that people are generating all this OC and posting it online of, like, ships that are full to the brim. Like, literally, you cannot even walk on it because it has so many skulls and treasure chests. And all this other stuff. And it's, like, this adrenaline-pounding event to get it back. But that's because there's nothing else to do. There's nothing else to do in the game other than to make that fun.
To be lit, we're not, like, trying to undercut anything. In Sea of Thieves, you start at outposts. And there's three different factions you can get quests from. One faction says, go here, kill a skeleton. Other faction says, go here, dig up a treasure chest. The other faction says, try and find an island with either a pig or a cow. Or a specific pig, or chicken, or something.
Right.
Capture them and then take them to another outpost.
Those merchant quests are duty, man.
Those are the only quests.
Yep.
The only way that those ever expand is just by adding another step. So as you level up a faction, eventually, like, the level 10 quests will be, go kill two skeletons, or go to two different islands
and kill skeletons. But this time, the skeletons are made of metal, and the way you kill them is by throwing water on them. So, you know, so, like,
small variables, but at no point is it anything other than run around an island, wait for the skeletons to spawn, kill them, pick up their skull. And every time you do something, you have to take the reward back to your ship and sail it to a outpost. The map is not super huge. It's pretty big if you were to sail from one end to the other. But beyond that, and then spending your loot on treasure, there is nothing. There's PvP if you run into other people.
There's a Kraken.
There's a Kraken that is actually only a few tentacles above water. It's not even fully modeled. So there is no sea monster. It's just tentacles that stick out of the water. What I will say is this game looks fantastic.
Oh, gorgeous, man. They make such a great use of that HDR.
It is a beautiful game, but it is the very definition of style over substance. There is, and I feel like when they made this game, they knew it was going on Game Pass. They knew that the formula would be people get Game Pass as it updates, and then people return to it from time and time again. I just don't see this game. Honestly, I would have been more comfortable with them releasing it as free to play and then charging for the cosmetics.
I genuinely don't know that I can say with 100% certainty that this game was not developed to sell Game Pass.
I think that's what it is.
Because, you know, if this is to have any staying power...
I think it started off as something very different.
I agree.
And became that.
And if this game is to have any staying power, and I hope it does, because, I mean, I've just had terrible fun playing it.
It's a good time.
I want to see a roadmap. I want to see... what they have planned. I want to see that they have developers who can deliver on those plans. I want to see, you know, some consistent progress. Otherwise, there's no point in having Games Pass. Like,
I got rid of my Game Pass.
I got Game Pass and I kept it because I thought, yeah, it's $10.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'll play a couple hours this month with my buddies. That'll be worth it in the end, you know? But like, it's not at this point because I haven't loaded it up.
Yeah,
so.
I played 20-25 hours of it. What I will say about it is a lot of people, you can go with a party of, you know, like four people on this big galleon ship, or you can go on what's called a sloop, which is a one or two person thing. I hear a lot of people saying that this game is not good for single player play, and I can agree. On the basis of if you're looking for some crazy adventure where you're a pirate, blah, 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 sail on the seas. But for me, Sea of Thieves worked best when I laid in my bed, got on a solo sloop, put in my earbuds, listened to a podcast, and just kind of sailed. Because I was lucky enough that I played it in the beginning when their server issues were such shit that you could barely see another person in your server. So I maybe played 10 hours of that game and only ran into one person. And by running into them, it meant I saw them and they tried to shoot me with a cannon. And then I went, no, I'm much faster than you, and just sailed away. I know a lot of people live for that whole pirate thing. You've seen a lot of really cool GIFs. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what this game is at a baseline. It is a fun chat room for your friends.
It's an anecdote generator, like you said.
It's a GIF creator. Yeah. I do not recommend anyone buys this at $60. Mm-hmm. I told a friend to buy it at $60, and I really feel bad for doing that.
Another really fundamental thing, and then I'll get off of this, is they didn't... In a lot of ways, it's like a flipped house. It's like they have this really great foundation that they built off of, but they cut so many corners.
Yeah.
And they cheaped out on a lot of stuff. Like, the cosmetic gear looks good, but it's like the same five models, just repurposed.
Yeah, nothing really stands out. When I looked at those cosmetics, I was like, everything's cool, but there's nothing that I'm like, oh, I need to get.
Yeah.
And if it was, it was like 40,000 gold.
And other than like being like, oh yeah, our crew's gonna dress in all red, and we're gonna wear these big old like musketeer hats. You know, you have the ship cosmetics, which are insanely expensive, like 250,000 gold pieces for a I don't know, paint,
which is ridiculous. When you go and you do a quest, it takes you 20 minutes, and you get 100 gold for it.
Right, and the final thing that I get frustrated with is, let's say I log on to Sea of Thieves, and I know my buddy Matt's going to get on a little later.
Yes.
And so I log on to a sloop, and Matt joins me eventually, because by luck and by providence, no random did.
Yeah.
Because that's always a possibility. And then our buddy Tyler gets on, and all of a sudden, we can't ride in the sloop anymore. Well, we got to completely exit out of the game and start over, because... Yep. The galleon can accommodate three, but the sloop can't, and there's no way to swap it out in a port or something like that.
Yeah, you have to. You have to just like, turn off your game. Be sure you're done with your quest.
That's so frustrating.
Everyone has to get on all at once. There's just a lot of kinks they're gonna have to work out, and it was fun, but I was supposed to review this game, and by the time I was done with it, I was like, I'm not going to, because
this is Rare's Destiny 1. So let's hope.
That is even doing an injustice to Destiny 1. Destiny 1 had a lackluster amount of content, but at least there was some progression.
True. I just want a Sea of Thieves, The Taken King.
Yes. Yeah, I think that this game could truly do something awesome if they make, like, raids.
Yep.
There is, like, a skull fort you can raid, but it's just more skeletons that are going to beat you up. I think they could do something good with this. When They pitched it. I thought it was a bunch of really cool pirate-themed quests and adventures with some narrative storytelling that you could do with your friends. It, like I said, turned out to be a chat room. At this point, I think we're just talking shit on it. So
yeah,
let's move on to this last game called Minute. So Minute.
Minute.
Minute is a game. Devolver Digital published it. I'm trying to think of who developed it. I can't think of their name. If you want to look that up. When the game starts, there's a bunch of like Twitter handles. It's very, very indie. The visuals represent like Game Boy, old school Game Boy, Commodore 64. It's all black and white, very blocky textures. You play as this little dude who looks like a Tamagotchi. It's top down, like your original kind of Zelda. But here is here's the hook.
It's just a bunch of names.
Yeah, okay. So it's like maybe a 4 or 5 person indie development team who made this. You find this cursed sword. Now, the curse of the sword is that you only have 60 seconds to live. Every 60 seconds you die, and then you restart at whatever home you started at. So, like, in the beginning, you have this little nice house. Eventually, you can find, like, a camper, a hotel that you go to. And so in that way, you can make progress across, you know, the decently sized map. But you have 60 seconds to accomplish whatever you need to accomplish. It's often little puzzles. Like you will find a guy and he'll be like, hey, I really need a bottle. This isn't something that's in the game, but hey, I really need a bottle. And you're like, oh, okay, so this guy needs a bottle. You die, you respawn, you start searching around, you find the bottle. Oh, I don't have enough time to get back to him. You die, but all the items you found carry over from run to run. So then you run over to that guy and you give him the bottle and he goes, oh, hey, thanks. Now you can have this jumping boots that make you jump over things. There's actually no jumping in the game, so none of this is in there. But you get the idea. You're solving these little puzzles, going through tiny dungeons. You have this sword. It's very basic. You can move and you can attack. It's all about solving these little puzzles and kind of exploring the world with this timer. The game is short. I beat it in about an hour and a half. There is an achievement for beating it in under 25 runs, so 25 deaths. That gives you an idea of how short the game is. But what's fun about it is the way it plays on those expectations, the way it uses its style to give you humor. It's also reminds me of a generation gone by. There's no objective marker. There's no anything that's pointing you towards where to go. You pick up the cursed sword and a guy goes, oh, you picked up that cursed sword? You should get to the factory as soon as possible. That's the only thing you know. Everything else is just, like I said, running into somebody who's like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And then you search around. So you have fetch questy stuff. You also have some more normal stuff like, hey, kill a few of these snakes and blah, 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 blah. But it's just, it's an inventive kind of thing. What it reminds me of, it's $10, is like a really, really well done Flash game. Mm-hmm. You know how like Alien Hominid was originally a game on Newgrounds.com before it was on Xbox 360. Yeah. The guys who made Alien Hominid led to Castle Crashers, led to Pit People, but they started just making these small games. And that's what Minute feels like to me. It feels like a very, very inventive, very smart, and more or less easy to play, and easy to understand puzzle game. It speaks to me on multiple levels because of both the indie style, the, like I said, all these cool little inventive ways it plays out, but it's never too complex.
Just from the initial stuff I've seen, I'm getting a Link's Awakening kind
of
look.
That's kind of like I said, it's Game Boy original because it's black and white,
right?
But there's the very blocky textures. It's not a bad looking game at all. Where it counts, it counts.
Sure.
But it does have that decidedly retro look to it. I think it's a great game, not only for the inventiveness of it, but the fact that a lot of people nowadays don't have hours and hours to sit down. If you really want to blast this game, like I said, it'll take you an hour and a half to 2 hours, maybe three if you really get stuck. But if you don't want to blast through it, you can pick it up before you go to sleep or when you're on a break from doing some work or whatever. You play two runs. You've spent 2 minutes with it. You've made some progress, and you come back another day. I think for $10, this is a must-buy. This will get talked about at the end of the year. We do Game of the Year stuff. I just oftentimes, especially now on the Xbox store, you see a lot of these games that are $5, $10, you know, ports of mobile games, a lot of idling games, and games like this that look indie, that look low res and are cheap can often be passed up as just filler on the marketplace.
I have another great example of this.
Yes.
Provided we have a few more minutes here.
Oh, sure, we do.
Into the Breach.
Yes, yes, yes. Talk about this.
You're done talking about Minit.
Yeah.
Is.
Minit, I just want to say, and it's M-I-N-I-T. So like Min-It, not Minit with a U-T-E. M-I-N-I-T. PlayStation 4, PC, Xbox One. I feel like they'll have to come to Switch eventually, considering it's like a 200 megabyte game. It's a no-brainer, perfect game for mobile or on-the-go play. But yeah, do yourself a favor, go out and pick it up. It's a great time. But yes, Into the Breach. I've been hearing a lot about this.
Oh, man. This is
that
game,
that 4x4 strategy
eight
thing?
8x8.
Okay, yeah.
So Into the Breach was something I heard about from a lot of people in the industry that were really raving about it. And, you know, I kind of thought, maybe this game's for me. Usually if I'm hearing enough buzz about a game, I'll know that there's something for everyone in there to some degree.
Yes.
This kind of game, like, I enjoy strategy games, but it was just like another, the way they were talking about it is one of those that you really just, you get sucked into, and I was like, I don't really have time for that.
This is the same guys who made FTL, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This is a game you want to make time for. This is a game you carve out time for.
It's that good.
It's fantastic. Okay, so conceptually, 8x8 grid, kind of, it is turn-based strategy.
Think Fire Emblem-esque.
Think more Final Fantasy Tactics Advance meets Advance Wars. You command a team of three mechs, pilots that are piloting mech suits.
Yeah.
That are traveling through time, and they are more or less observing optimal time streams in which these creatures that are coming out of the earth and destroying cities don't do that. And so you have three different mechs that possess three different styles of fighting that you can optimize and change weapons on, and all those things do different things. That sounds vague, but I'll get into that soon.
Yes.
and every round or so, these bugs crawl up out of the earth or move to attack cities. But the catch is that they move a turn behind. So the bugs will move, and they will declare an attack on a city. You have until the next round to prevent that attack from going through. So whether you use your Titan-class mech that can punch a creature and move it one square, thereby moving the bug into the adjacent square, rendering its attack useless because it swings at empty air rather than a city, or you have your artillery class that can launch a missile that can either target on the ground around the bug or the bug itself and will push the adjacent squares away. So it's a lot of this movement-based strategy.
It's almost like if you take a strategy game and then you make each turn a mini puzzle.
Yes, literally exactly that. Because sometimes they'll wrap you up in webbing and you can't move.
Yes.
And so you have to figure out how to free your mech by moving that bug with another mech and then using your mech to its full capability.
I can't remember who made this parallel. It was either on one of the Giant Bomb and or Beast casts, or it was potentially on Besties. But someone made the parallel of, if you play chess or you play checkers a lot, there are these games that are simulations of, here's a chessboard, you have to win in two moves. It's already set up as this is.
Yeah.
Use your chess knowledge to complete that. And I've heard that a lot of people say that's what Into the Breach is.
Yeah.
It's realizing the moves that your team has, how everyone's positioned, and not only what your mechs can do, but what the movement of those powers will do to the rest of the playing field.
And the other part, even further than that, is sometimes there are, well, the most fundamental part of this is that bugs will emerge from the earth.
Straight
up. The only way you can stop them from doing that is by either occupying the space on top of them or moving another bug into that space.
Because
once they emerge, they will cause damage and will not emerge.
You're partially wrong, because you can go underground if you get a big drill. You and your friend Dom can go down, and then you can...
Oh, you're not piercing the heavens with your drill?
No. You're piercing, going down into the earth, because that's where the locusts come out.
Right.
The emergence day is when they came out.
What about Coltrane?
Well, he's there too, if you need him. how do you stop the Locust Horde in Gears of War? That was going to just be, it was a joke where I was like, haha, Gears of War is into the breach. But now I'm remembering that I don't remember how Marcus Fenix and Dominic Toretto, that's the guy from the Vin Diesel movies, Fast and the Furious, Dom, his buddy, how they even stop the Locusts. Find out next time when I replay Gears of War 2. I'm not going to. But Into the Breach.
Into the Breach.
PC only?
Here, I got a couple more little quick mechanic things.
Okay, yes.
It is PC only. Okay. If it doesn't come to Switch, I'll eat my own underwear.
I feel like it is a game that this is game good would, for touch controls
and mobile.
This game
would be amazing on mobile.
Yeah.
I would literally cry the day that I find out this is on mobile. So the other aspects of the game that I find super fascinating are, so let's say you fail a mission. Because not every mission is kill all the bugs.
Because you suck.
In fact, a lot of the missions are fight until the bugs give up, or protect this particular power plant for 5 turns. Things like that.
I feel
it. If you fail, you only get to choose one of your pilots to take back in time with you.
Oh, there's a permadeath kind of thing?
And they level up over time. And so if you have one pilot that's really good and... Yeah, and there's a permadeath feature.
And you lose it, you're shit out of luck.
You start all over.
That's rough. That's the kind of shit I don't like, because sometimes, let me tell you, I get a little goofy, and I play some of these games, and I make some brash decisions, to say the least. And then I go, whoops, and turn off the Xbox.
See, here's the thing, though. You can succeed the mission without winning, if that makes sense.
There's always a middle ground.
Yeah, so like you can... win the mission but not complete all the objectives, and you just don't get the rewards, or you have this feature that's like energy. It's what you use to power your mechs.
I just had a really good just scene in my head where this giant bug is about to squash this little town, and then there's the mech and they're standing in between it, and the bug's like, I'm gonna get it, and the mech's like, not if I don't first. Squashes the entire town, because you only had to save 2 towns, not all 3.
You got the right idea.
Yeah.
You got the right idea.
Yeah.
But the energy.
Break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Yeah.
Kill a few hundreds to save a thousands.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Watchmen style.
Who watches the Watch mechs? The guy who's playing as him. Hey, I also heard that Watchmen is getting an HBO. Sorry to derail, but
no, you're good.
Watchmen's getting an HBO or Showtime series, and The Hobbit, or not The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings. TV series is underway for like some ridiculous amount of money. Also, Game of Thrones just finished
a 55 night battle scene. Yeah.
But here's something that I heard brought up is that no spoilers, by the way, for Game of Thrones here. But the big battle from last season, we won't name it because potential spoilers just from the name. But the best part of that, the very enclosed and claustrophobic, it came from the crew and cast not having enough time. So some of the best scenes in battle history of Game of Thrones stem from them not having enough time to do what they want and coming up with these very inventive ways to shoot what they want. So I'm sure it's going to be awesome. I'm sure Game of Thrones is going to be awesome. 55 days. Can you imagine that? Just 2 months of battle scenes and battle scenes.
At night, nonetheless.
True. That too, because, okay, it's going to be a nighttime one.
That's what they said. It was all night shoots.
And where they film, I believe, is very cold at night.
Yes, very cold.
You gotta give it to them, man. They use IKEA rugs as capes. That's not a lie. That's a real thing. Jon Snow wears an IKEA rug.
No shit.
Yeah, for the whatever it's supposed to be, the bear skin or something, it's literally dead ass an IKEA rug.
That's awesome.
So Into the Breach, cheaper game, right? Like $20?
Yep.
$30, something like that?
Absolutely worth every penny. I cannot recommend it enough. If you are somebody who finds that you spend more time with mobile-style games like Switch or hopefully on mobile, I would wait. Or if you're a cool guy like me, you're probably going to buy it more than once.
There's very few games that are on PC that I go, hey, you should really buy this game, even before it's out on other systems. This is a game that will be out on other systems, but you should go and get it on PC.
You should
get in on the ground floor.
It really is fantastic.
And it's not very, it doesn't demand a lot from your computer. No. You can run it on a fucking Apple II. You'll be fine.
You can run it on a TI-83.
You can run it on,
Virtual Boy.
What's the kind of calculator where you could type just boobies, but like you can't do anything else?
Casio?
Yeah, you can run on a Casio.
That's a keyboard, too.
You can run on a keyboard. You'll need a keyboard to play it. We've gone off the rails.
And 4 mice. You need to take the balls out and arrange them into a cube.
There is so many things coming out this month. There's really not that so many things, but there's quite a few things. At the end of the game section, we always like to kind of talk about what we'll be talking about soon. Yakuza 6, like I said, April 17th. We have the Rick and Morty virtual, or what is it called? Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality coming out for the PSVR. I think it just came out, but we should be getting a code for that soon.
Just throwing this out there because we're kind of an all things nerdy.
Yes.
Pat Rothfuss is writing a Rick and Morty D&D adventure.
I would like to play that.
And, yeah.
more things that are coming out.
I started playing Warhammer.
Like with the figs?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that is a lot of money. That is an investment. Josh Abbott? I think he's the one who does the Warhammer stuff.
Yeah, we split a box.
Okay, hell yeah. There's definitely things coming out. 420 Blaze It, you got Nintendo's cardboard experiment known as Nintendo Labo. God of War will be coming out. Lots of stuff. You know what? We forgot
about it. I'll never get to play it.
God of War?
Yeah.
Just come over and hang out and play it. Okay. At the top of the show, we forgot in the news segment to bring up this. It just hit my brain because I was thinking of Sony properties. Spyro Reignited Trilogy.
That's right, yeah.
That is really gearing up the September. Now that we have them kind of in a row,
Amazon dropped the ball there.
Pretty much. September's looking pretty hot because on the 7th, you got Spyro Reignited Trilogy. That's all three of the original Spyro games. Spyro Year of the Dragon. Wait, I think the first one is just called Spyro the Dragon, Spyro 2 Ripto's Rage, Spyro 3 Year of the Dragon? Something like that. They're all being remade and re-up-res, completely new, kind of like the Crash Bandicoot game. The week after that, we got Tomb Raider. The week after that, we have Spider-Man. And then like a month after that, we have Red Dead and Black Ops. We're going to see a lot of stuff at E3. This E3 is going to be fucking insane. I'm not going to do any of my E3 predictions. We'll get to them. But I think that's kind of all that's coming out in April.
Yep.
We'll have our Lima Bean Respect Day 420 episode, as always.
Naturally.
It's looking like a good season. I'm really excited for E3. I'm really excited for this holiday season.
We're going into this year kind of blind, I feel, compared to the past few years.
Well, because last year there was so much stuff that was kind of pushed back, and I think 2018 is right where you're going to get a lot of announcements for 2019.
And I bet you're going to get a lot of great indie games this year.
Yes. I mean, 2017, I think, was the year where a lot of things got pushed back and finally released.
And then big AAAs came out.
Yes. I think 2018...
That's my prediction.
...might rival it. What's your prediction?
My prediction for 2018 is that we're going to get just a kick-ass lineup of indie games.
And
Into the Breach is leading.
My prediction, my general prediction is that you're going to get a lot of announcements of really big games that will be coming out in 2019.
Or 2020.
There's some. We'll get to it with our E3 predictions. I'm
not saying they're announcing that.
They won't. But what I'm saying is that if Bethesda doesn't announce Elder Scrolls 6, what are they going to do?
Skyrimmer.
They can't. They've released Skyrim on goddamn everything.
No, they didn't. Not on mobile. PUBG did.
It's Fallout New Vegas 2, Elder Scrolls 6, or Doom 2. There's no other way they can go. They already have, I think, Elder Scrolls Online content. We'll talk about this in another episode. It's like an hour and 15 minutes in.
Yeah, we're
talking y'all's ear off. Once again, if you like the show, guys, be sure to subscribe on iTunes, wherever the hell you do stuff. While Kevin gets ready for this game fact, I'm gonna pull together some of these great social media things you can hit us up at. We have a Facebook group. We're trying to change. Well, we have a page.
We're gonna switch over to a group. I actually almost did that today.
We'll get around to it. Kevin's gonna probably have to do it because I'm just so lazy. It's SuperGameCast64. Facebook.com/SGC and then 64 spelled out. And that will get you the Facebook page. If you want to talk to us on Twitter, I'm at SGC64 Matt.
I'm at gingerbeard_man, beer like the beverage.
And the official show Twitter is at SuperGameCast64. If for any reason you want to email us, if you're a developer or somebody within the industry who wants to reach out to us, or if you're a fan, you have a question, you don't want to use any social medias, it's SGC64mail@gmail.com. We also just started a new RSS feed. The RSS feed that we had, basically, for those who don't 100% know about podcasts or what an RSS feed is, it's the way that we put out our episodes. So before, if you subscribe to the old feed, you might not be getting these new episodes. If you're here now and you're listening to them, congratulations, you found us, so be sure to subscribe on whatever app you're on.
And even more importantly than that, share Because there's probably a lot of people that don't realize that our RSS feed migrated, and they may not be getting anything in their sub.
And there lies the issue, is because the old feed is now gone and not still there, I can't put up any sort of announcement. I kind of messed that up. It's a whole hoopla, but... you know, share it with your friends. Let people know. We might have a Patreon here coming up, a website coming up here as well.
And quite frankly, if we see you share, we have so many games we can give away. You know, if you share, comment, like us, whatever, just hit us up. We'll hook you up with a code.
And to that point, if you do review us on iTunes, we are really asking for iTunes reviews right now. I know some people have put some in there, I believe. We'll get around to those next episode, I want to say. But if you do, leave us a review. Please make it a 5-star because you love us. But even if it's not a 5-star, our very own review robot 2K12 3000 will read it live in the studio. So you can put some funny tidbits in there, as long as it's not super racist, sexist, or completely appallable. Is that a word? It's not a word.
No.
Appalling. Thank you. Then it'll be fine to go. Am I forgetting? Oh, yeah. Visit a90skid.com. You can read some articles, mostly reviews by me, some articles by Kevin. If you want some awesome other podcasts to listen to, if you're a fan of anime, listen to the Shonen Trash Cast. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. great. We love our friends Vince, Kevin, and Lauren over there.
Yep.
You have one, right?
My buddies over at Choose My Own Adventure Podcast.
Yeah,
it's
we love
that. It's a real play tabletop RPG podcast in which the audience chooses the fate of the characters in the game. Every week they put out a poll where you get to choose what the next fork in the road resolves into.
And if you like video podcasts, me and Matt Falify from a90skid.com do Game Think Talk every week. You can find that on, I believe, SoundCloud, also YouTube. If you look up a90skid on YouTube, you will be able to see those. But that's all I got. Kevin, you have a spicy game fact?
I'm going to give you a twofer this week. One is topical and one is historical. So the topical one is that GTA just surpassed, GTA 5 Online, that is, yes, just surpassed a huge record in the games industry in that they've earned over $6 billion in payment.
Becoming the best-selling piece of media, or most profitable piece of media of all time.
Ever. Media. Capital M Media.
Also, shouts out to Black Panther for overtaking Titanic, I think it was?
I think they just fell short.
I think they're in the number three of all time. I don't know.
Dope.
Black Panther is really pushing up in the all-time most grossing movies in American cinema.
Historical fact.
Yeah.
You know the Koopalings from Super Mario, named after famous musicians? You know, there's
everyone knows that.
Ludwig, Iggy, Lemmy.
Yes.
They're all named after, you know, famous musicians, like I said.
Yeah. That's been a game fact before.
What a lot of people don't know is that there is a fire-breathing Triceratops in Mario World, Super Mario World.
Yes.
Its name is Reznor.
Like Trent.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So not only do you have the great, great Koopa kids, but the Trent Reznor Triceratops.
Yep.
Shouts out. I didn't know he was a huge Mario fan. It makes sense,
though. He made the Quake soundtrack.
Yeah.
So.
Trent Reznor, he also did the soundtrack for Social Network.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
That's the one about Mark
that
Zuckerberg.
That was not a game fun. Zuckerberg.
That's a very topical fact.
Mark Zuckerbot.
Mark Zuckerberg. He's going to shut us down, probably. All the way from... I don't know.
Tom wouldn't have done this.
No, he definitely wouldn't have. Shout out to Tom from MySpace,
my
man.
My first friend.
Way to keep it 100. Guys, it has been the end of a great episode of Super Gamecast 64. We talked about so many things, and I'm so glad that you joined us. If you're still listening, I applaud you. But we have to go. We have to take off for now. We'll see you. Like I said, my birthday's coming up this weekend. And then after that, we got that big old Lima Bean Respect Day. Gotta respect it. 420 Blaze It. Guys, I believe, and as your host, I'm going to grant you enough XP to level up. I think at this point in Season 4, y'all just hit level 2.
At least.
Or level 3, depending on... We'll
some of you
out.
That show up every week, you get more XP than others. You
yeah,
know?
It depends. You got to really put it in to you get out what you put in. But you definitely...
Phrasing,
like,
man.
You're definitely like level 3 now. Good job, guys. We'll see you soon. Much love from Super Gamecast 64 to you. Bye!
Later.